Hey y'all. Hey Sage, what's up?
Hey Rebel, you're what's up? You know that.
Up and away. We
Oh,
have with us the amazing, fabulous, one and only Joaquin Garay the third.
yes,
All right, so
Joaquin.
welcome.
Thank you for coming,
Thank you for
Joaquin.
having me. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Absolutely.
I would have to say, just right off the top, you would be not just one of our quintessential guests, but probably minus Hyman Farrar, the only other entertainer that's been in the business for as long as you've been.
Oh wow.
Most of your life, I'm getting most of your
Yeah.
life, right? Yeah.
I mean, I started in 73. I was five. Yeah, I was on the this is not a joke. I was on the Bill Cosby variety show. So no
Wow.
back then on NBC he had a variety show. And then at the end of the show, he would sit like on these steps with all these kids, and talk to us, kind of make fun, funny jokes. And I was one of those kids. So that was my first job. And
Nice.
I joined SAG in 75.
That was before Bill's Jell-O years.
Yeah. Oh.
The
Gypsy! Joaquin. No.
yellow
Okay, so yeah.
Come over here. No, that's terrible. That's terrible.
My humor's a little dry, what can I say?
Yeah, so 47 years in SAG. Unfortunately, SAG and AFTRA joined up, so my number changed, which sucks. But my original number was 43,400, because in those days, every time a person joined, the number went up.
Right.
43,000. When my daughter joined, she was over a million.
Wow.
Isn't that insane? I know.
I didn't know there were that many actors.
Right? Oh, well, it's oversaturated now. You know that.
Right,
It's
right, right.
crazy.
That's all right. As long as we can get them to listen to our show, we're really not concerned.
That's all that
Yeah.
matters.
We've been really pondering like who is our audience? And I think for the most part, our audience is exactly our guests. People
Okay.
like yourselves who have been in it in the
Yeah.
trenches, working all their lives, people who are just coming into it, people like Carmina who
Yeah.
are, shooting stars on their way up. We've had people who have been like in the music industry for, 40, 50 years, and I really think that we're for entertainers.
You know what? I'm gonna ask my brother to maybe do your podcast. My brother Val? Yeah.
Yeah,
I
he's in the
mean,
music industry, yes.
oh gosh, he's an icon. I mean, it's not because he's my brother, but he's a living legend. He's a part of Americana. I mean,
Yeah.
Betty Davis Eyes, Neil Diamond, Mamas and Papas, Jackson Brown, Islands in the Stream.
Really?
Above, you want to
He
hear
did
a funny
that?
story? Huh? Yeah, above
Did he write
his
those
toilet.
or he played on them?
No, he's an engineer.
Oh,
Just
cool.
a producer. But he has a over remember We Are the World?
Yeah.
He engineered that in his studio, and above his toilet is he has the platinum record. I don't know why it's above his toilet, but every time I go to the restaurant, I'm like, hey, We Are the World.
Hey.
Yeah, my brother is, forget about it. So
That's
I'll see
amazing.
if he, yeah. If we're an entertainment family, I guess. I mean, my father was a singer, comedian, nightclub entertainer, actor. And I think that's why I got in it so young. And Carmina's the same thing. I mean, she's 16, but she's been at it 16 years. She started when she was 8 months. So I think that happens sometimes, just like doctors or lawyers or, police officers or
Kids
fire.
do what their parents did.
Yeah, it happens a lot.
That's a very familial tradition, not just an American phenomenon, but that's kind of families always were. Farmers were farmers, and blacksmiths were blacksmiths, and song and dance men were had little song and dance men.
Oh my word. My dad was a song and dance man for sure.
Because what that was when your dad was entertaining, that was the where vaudeville was starting to transition into more film and stuff like that.
He started in 29, so, and I know Rebel, you're kind of going, wait a minute, how's that possible? My dad was born 1911, and my mother was his sixth wife. So that's how I came. Yeah, like my brother's 80, my older brother.
Wow.
I have, I have a little brother who's 43. So that's so my dad was in the den of vaudeville. Sorry about the dogs. Lily! My dad came in at the end of Ottawa 29 in San Francisco at a place called the Fox Theater. And in those days, to sell music, they would have singers sing sheet music. And that's how people made money on music, is by selling it to people and then they could play it at their house. So my dad started singing in the orchestra pit, and he was there. He just started when he was 17. And he was there for 3 years. And, you know, he went back periodically, but that's where his career started. And then, of course, in 1934, he was in his first film called It Happened One Night with Claudette Colbert and Clark Gable.
Wow.
Watch that movie. There's a part on the bus where they're singing. My dad's one of the singers. So.
That's amazing.
So many stories. I have another story about my dad, huh?
It's a rich entertainment history that you come from, but you know what? I know factually that you have built your own rich entertainment history, and I really, you know, I'm guessing that the offerings that you have are many, and so I would kind of just like to, I don't know, I don't know, start somewhere with, you know, I mean, it's one thing to be born into it, but what really gave you that taste for it? You know, that what really just kind of locked you in? If
well, it's complicated. Probably not so much to do with entertainment. Probably more to do with father-son relationship. Have to do with being so in love and idolizing my father. I mean, I think, you know, just from the start, watching him on stage, watching him sing, watching the Three Caballeros, the cartoon, watching his movies, you know, in those days, you know, he had to bring out the reel-to-reel, you know, so it was you know, because we didn't have tape, so.
Pull the curtain flat over the wall and.
No, he had like a professional.
Oh, the tripod and all that?
Yeah. But, you know, I just wanted to be just like my dad. I mean, it's just the bottom line. I wanted to be him, you know, which I can't be, or I could never be. But, you know, I just fell in love with that idea. And my dad did not want me to be anything to do with entertainment, not be an entertainer, not be an actor. He wanted me to be a dentist. And that's the truth. That's the whole life. I want you to be a dentist. I want you to go to school, get your degree, and be a dentist. Because, you know, he was at the height, you know, a millionaire in San Francisco, and his lowest in the 60s when he met my mother, you know, holes in his underwear. I mean, that's basically, I mean, Rudy, I know you have holes in your underwear. I'm not.
Not these ones. I changed them.
Okay.
This week, but, the 1 week.
But I think it happens with all these families, like the Michael Douglas. You know, you kind of are in the shadow of your father if you follow his career, but or your mother. But I was just trying to please him, and the more I booked, the more that I felt like, wow, I'm, you know, getting closer to. But for many years, I felt, you know, he died when I was 20, so, but I felt, you know, like I wasn't good enough, or I never achieved that. You know,
you didn't get that validation that you were looking for.
No, I mean, he was very proud of me, and you know, but when I was growing up and I was a kid, a child actor, I was, you know, pressured to make money to book, you know, because basically I supported the family. We had a restaurant, you know, but you know, they pushed me in that direction. I had an ulcer at 12. I mean, it just tells you. And the funny thing, Hollywood, I was on a show called Via Alegre, Children's Bilingual Show on PBS. I was on it for 7 years. And the day that I was feeling bad, you know, I was having like stomach problems, stomach ache. I was just about to go on to do the scene and I threw up blood. And I was like, oh my gosh, I was, you know, and the assistant director comes over. What happened? What do you, I go, I don't know. I threw up blood. I don't feel good. He's like, okay. Are you okay? You feel good? Yeah, I guess. All right, let's get this shot and we'll take you to the doctor.
Yeah. Hey, you know what?
That's Hollywood.
Very typical of the business. We got to get what we got to get and then we'll take care of you.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
It's
probably a good reason why the old man didn't want you doing it.
Oh, yeah. For many more reasons than that. Especially, you know, I mean, I don't want to say it in this way, but we're still in Hollywood, especially now, we're still back where we started. I mean, look at the Golden Globe nominations, Oscar nominations, film parks. You know, we got the Mayans. What LA? What's up? But, you know, what else? And why does it have to be, you know, a bicycle gang, you know? And every part that I go out for is 5 lines or less, and I'm the valet, I'm the gardener, I have an accent. It's still, and my dad was fighting this in the 50s. My dad was a contract player in the 50s for MGM, and all his parts were stereotypical. You know, he's talking like this, and I'm the Mexican in this film, and I, you know, it's like, fine, that was the 50s, but we're 2021, and I'm still fighting the same fight, you know?
Yeah, I mean, if anything, culturally, here's what I find to be funny, is culturally, Hollywood still wants that thing, but other cultures are now imitating the Latino culture. So it's almost like, for lack of a better comparison, it's like white kids rapping.
Yes.
Now they're into folklorico. I mean,
yeah.
It's definitely. That appropriation is, it's ridiculous. And it pushes.
I think Eminem is awesome. I mean, I think. I'm serious. I think he's great. I mean, but yeah. I mean, you know, thank God Carmina, you know, has the opportunity to be on Disney Plus on her show, Diary of a Future President, which the second season is about to drop. But that's a show produced by a Latina, written by a Latina, Elena Pena. I always get her name wrong, Elena Pena. Anyway.
It's a great show. That's a great show.
Thank you. And it's produced, directed, written, Gina Rodriguez, about Latinos. And it works. And it's not, you know, it is sort of pointing in that direction, but it's not like in your face, down your throat. You know, these are Mexican.
Right.
I don't want to, like, we have a scene, and I don't want you to mistake, Hollywood says, I don't want you to mistake that guy right there is Mexican. He's not just a guy. He's a Mexican dude. You know?
Right.
I don't, you know. We're still battling that same problem, you know?
Well, you know, how do you get the machine to change its gears? Yeah. It's rough. And, you know, it really depends on the consumer and whether or not they're going to stop and go, wait a minute. Jose that lives next door to me doesn't act like this.
Right.
You know, yeah, it's like, hey, my boss Juan, he doesn't act like this, you know?
Or have an accent or speak English.
Right, right.
Don't watch telenovelas.
Right, right.
None of that.
Yeah, my dentist is not, you know, wearing a bandana that averts his eyes while he's, you know, while he's drilling my face. my dentist doesn't say, hey, what's up, Rebel? I got the gas for you. My dentist doesn't do that.
Rebel, it's crazy, but, you know, we used to do this with black people. You know, we used to put them in this box of you know, here I come, you know, and that stopped. It's over with.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, We've had a couple different guests on, and we've had similar conversations with them. And afterwards, I tell Sage, I'm like, you know, I don't say much during those conversations because, one, I'm quite clearly a total white girl. I mean, like, you know, and...
I thought you were Native American.
Hey, from Texas, Stephen.
Maybe I'm Indigenous, but I don't want to appropriate anything because that seems to piss off the universe. So I don't want to do that. And it's like, I wouldn't, it's weird. It always makes me think when we have these conversations, I'm like, it is very true. Everything is, you know, white people taking up rap, pigeonholing Latinos in roles like that. And I had noticed that before we started interviewing people and talking to people. And I'm like, what the hell? Why is this still happening in 2021? I don't understand it. We've got all this stand up, you know, stop Asian hate, Black Lives Matter, all of this stuff, and we still have a battle. The battle is still the white people and them, their blindness. And yeah. I say that, and I'm a white girl, of course, you know, mm-hmm. but it's frustrating. I don't think anybody should have to still have these conversations and these concerns in 2021. I don't know why we can't all just love each other and move forward and just accept people for who they are.
So true. It's so true. And, you know, Brandy was, my wife was telling about some show that they just recast the lead. It was originally a Latina show. I wish I remember the name of it. It was originally a Latina show and they cast, and it was going to be a Latina as the lead, but they said, now this is what they said, you know, online, but they couldn't find any funny Latinas.
What?
What I said.
No funny Latinas.
So they had to cast
the white one that will whip your ass.
I don't know any Latinas that aren't funny mixed with badass.
Yes.
I mean, like, I don't, like, I grew up in Texas. All my Latino friends are a mixture of that.
And a lot of it, you know, a lot of these, like CBS has a diversity showcase, which I've never been able to get into because it went from, you know, for Asian, Blacks, Mexicans to white people who are gay, which is cool, but right. That's now the diversity. So then that squeezed everybody out. So it's back to white. So I'm like, wait a minute, you know, it's like a joke, you know, or they'll send out, Rudy knows this, when you send out, they'll send out a breakdown for a part, and they'll say all ethnicities. Then you watch that movie or whatever it was, and it's a white person.
Yeah, no, it's not all ethnicities.
There's no ethnicity.
They do it so that we're looking,
right?
But, yeah,
but we can't find any.
And
you know,
and I do have a comment on that. And I know I've talked about this recently with another guest of ours, the Hallmark Channel stuff. Sage, yeah. But I've noticed Hallmark used to be strictly and totally homogenous, white, completely, you know, just like your bougie white people.
The channel.
And I've noticed lately they're trying to mix it up. Like they've had gay couples on the show and, you know, they've mixed up. They've got some Latino/Latina. I'm sorry. The correct term, I believe, is Latinx, or so I'm told. I don't know. I'm not cool.
Hey, hold.
But I've seen it grow, like the opportunities for other people. And I missed whatever Sage just said. Sage, what did you just say?
That I said, I think we need our own slogan. something. Yeah, yeah. I think we need a Latino slogan for the culture at large, and particularly for the industry. And I think it should be "Get down with Brown."
Okay, I like that. It changes every few years. I don't know. I'm like, oh, that's what I am now. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Latinx.
Latinx. Yeah.
Sage, my buddy Antonio, that I talk about sometimes, he's the one who told me about that. I was saying Latino and Latina, and he was like, "You're wrong. It's Latino." And I was like, "No, I'm not wrong. I'm just not cool." But that's okay. I'm cool with that.
I don't use made up words. How's that?
Exactly.
Antonio, if you listen, you know I love you.
Me too, Antonio, but I don't use made up words.
Sage is just picking fights here. Just ignore him, Antonio. Joaquin, we just have too much fun doing this.
We do. We do.
So anyways, you know, I think the bottom line is we got to create our own content. That's what Elena Peña is doing on Diary of Future President. And we just have to continue in that direction, you know, do it ourselves.
And the last decade or so, you've been writing and directing and doing some of your own projects. And it's not, and I mean, I helped you do the one way back when. Yeah. I remember sound guy. I got to be a sound guy. That was awesome.
That's right.
But
you have skills I don't know about, Sage.
Oh, I do. Yeah.
He's a good boom. So, holds a stick.
Boom. Yeah, you know, I did some of this. I'm over the head, too. My arms were tired, man.
I'm tired.
I almost, it was a good thing my steering wheel was smaller. I couldn't get home.
Yeah, yeah. A little bit of anus, eh? I like it, eh?
Oh, jeez. So bad.
I know.
So good. But I mean, you've thrown yourself into the you know, creating your own content and it's not, I mean, from what I've been able to pick out and just what I work on with you and then some of the research I've done, is it's not really this whole cultural pushback. What you're doing is actually inclusive. You're telling stories, and you know, the ethnic makeup of the characters is really not even an issue. And I think that, just from my perspective, I think that one thing that Hollywood is worried about is this kind of, you know, this kind of taking over. But they're not willing to accept. It's like, hey, at the end of the day, we're Americans too. You know, we express the experience from our lens. And it's not much different than the black guy and the white guy and the yellow guy that are Americans too.
Yep.
And it's rough. It's rough.
Well, I work in a restaurant too. I'm an actor, right?
Right.
But I always laugh. I always make this little joke, you know, sometimes it doesn't go over very well, but we'll have a white person come in and sit down, and then they'll be like, "Oh, hola, amigo. Where are you from?" And I'll be like, "Koreatown?" And they're like, no. Where are you from originally? Oh, I was born in Canoga Park.
Right. And you just smile bigger.
They're still like.
And it's always white people that do that dumb shit.
I mean, I know. I don't want to point.
No. Either. You are exactly right on about that.
But you know, and it doesn't stop there. Like, no, where are you from originally? I'm like, oh, you mean my family? They're from Mexico. And then I come back with, so are you from Germany, Sweden, Norway?
Do you sometimes hear your tip get smaller as you question them?
Yeah. I don't care. I don't care.
Right.
At that point, it's a great improv moment, right?
As I leave, I'll go, "Dankeschön."
Oh my goodness.
But it's, I don't do that when I go to eat a restaurant. I don't ask the waiter who's white. So where are you from originally? I mean, it just doesn't happen. And that's what I'm talking about, you know?
Yeah. I think next time you get asked, you should say, why? Would you like to know what's touching your food? Oh, is that too much? No. Keep your job. Don't listen to me. Keep your job. Keep that survival going.
But trust me, it happens all the time. All the time.
So strange.
I believe that.
So something I'm really excited about, and I really want to hear about it. You're doing an improv class.
Yep. Yeah. Well, this is a funny story. It all started, you know, Tony Plana, of course, from the Three Amigos. He played El Jefe. And a million other things, of course. But Tony Plana started an organization at SAG called the East Los Angeles. Do you know about it, Rudy? East Los Angeles Latino Theater Group, something like that. You heard of it?
No, I don't think I have. I know that there's a Latino theater group, but I didn't know if it was
That's downtown LA. That's different. So this he started like 25 years ago. And why he started it was, of course, to bring culture and art and theater to the inner city kids. But not only that, to give out of work actors, which is most of us, if you take all the actors that are SAG, 1% work and can make a living at it. So just imagine, the rest of us can't. So he started this so that we could become teachers to these kids through this organization, through SAG. So that's how I found out about it. So I wanted to do something extra, kind of fun. This is probably 10 years ago. So I went to this interview thing where it's a big round table, like 40 people, and they're interviewing people to do this job through Tony Plana, right? And I just wanted to meet Tony Plana, honestly.
Right. Yeah, always a fan.
Yeah. Yes. But that same night, before we left, the lady who was in charge said, and if anybody lives out in West Covina, I have a school there, Coronado Continuation High School. I need a teacher there immediately. But none of these people live out where I live, out here in the San Gabriel Valley. They all live in Hollywood, LA, Santa Monica. So really, she was in trouble. So I asked her after, I go, hey, and first of all, you're supposed to go through like a training program. This takes months.
Right.
I'm like, hey, I live out in Azusa. I'm right there. I'd love to help you. Just let's get this going. Okay. She called me the next day. The next day after that, I was in the classroom. Just thrown into it. I didn't even, no train, nothing.
No background check?
She was desperate. She needed somebody. And that's how I started. So I jumped everybody that was there. I jumped and I became like, you know, one of the head teachers at this thing, because they needed people who were Latinx. And
go, please don't say that again. Your feelings.
So what we would do through this organization is we'd go into Coronado, for example. It's a continuation high school where these children are at risk youth on their last leg. This is their last chance. And through
troublemakers.
Like Rudy and I, you know.
Right.
through theater history, through a little bit of improv. At that time, it was a bit, right? So that's what kind of drew me into it. But it was more about, you know, where did theater start? With the Greeks. You know, how did they build their theaters, you know, on a slant? That's why why this is downstage and this is upstage, because it was actually like this. This way, the people in the back could see you when you were at the back of the theater. Anyways, but I started interjecting more and more improv, because first of all, if you stand there, these kids are already in trouble, so they don't care already. But if you stand there and lecture, just talk, forget about it. It's never going to work. So I saw opportunities to throw improv in and make them laugh, me doing the improv and showing them how it works. And that kind of has my little hook. That's how I got started. And then I met Tiffany Sierra, who is an Improv It Up, which I work for now. There, because she was one of the teachers they hired, And I trained her, which is funny because I didn't know what I was doing anyways.
Right. You improv the whole thing.
I did. I trained her, but that's how we met. And when she left to make her own school or business, because hers is more of a business, she brought me along. So that's where I work with now. But what Rudy was alluding to is I'm going to start finally, after all these years, my own school in Hollywood. It's called the Working Actors Theater and Improv and Acting School. And it'll be like the Groundlings. It'll be like Second City, UCB. But my focus is more about getting improv to help you land your roles and to become a better actor. So those schools, yes, they're building, you know, great improvers. And you have to start at the beginning and go to the middle and then the advanced. And then maybe you get in the show and then maybe you perform there and then you become a groundling. My students are going to start in the show immediately. We're going to put on shows every weekend because what I learned through my experience, again, it's just me, but I learned more on stage than I did in class. When you're in front of a real audience who paid to be there, who is not going to laugh because they're your friends or oh my gosh, Joaquin's going to do Scarface again. Oh, you know, because that's what happens in class. Rudy will tell you these, either they're going to be mean to you because they're jealous and not going to laugh or not going to treat you right, or they're going to be really, you know, accepting of what you're doing. But this is class, and you can't learn when there's three people in the audience and two of them are drunk. Learn how to negotiate that and how to make it work. Sure. You learn it all, you know, and that's what we're going to focus on. So it's the Working Actors Theater. Yeah, so Sage, what I was saying is that it'll be in Hollywood. I'm looking for a theater now. It'll be a few classes a week to start, you know, and then we'll put on shows on the weekends. And I'm going to have a core cast, and then I'm going to rotate the students through. So that's how it'll work.
That sounds amazing. And you know what? Yeah. I know firsthand, performing is where you learn the most about the craft, because you can go over technique, you can learn your lines, someone can tell you how to block for an audience or block for a camera or tell you how to do your makeup or tell you how to dress. You can tell you all those kinds of things, and you can sit in front of the mirror and do it endlessly, but you don't really know what you're doing until you get that energy coming back, until you hear it back. And then that's where the honing, that's where the real beauty of the craft comes in, is learning how to like that.
Yeah. And during this time of COVID, this last year, I've had opportunities to do stand-up, to do improv online on this platform. And I just can't. This doesn't work for me. I mean, it's just that lag. It's not the same, you know. And I know the Groundlings is doing it, all these, and they're selling tickets. But I have to be on stage with my cast. You know, it's a very personal, intimate thing that doesn't work on Zoom, you know. I mean, they're doing it and they're selling it out and all this other stuff, but I just don't, I want to be on stage. And I know we're in the midst of this epidemic, but hopefully soon that'll end and we can get back in the theater, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's where the magic happens. You know, people say the magic of movies, but you know, you and I both know, having done work on camera, that's a lot of work.
Yeah.
And it's a lot for the performer. It's a lot of being ready and having to be repetitive. Whereas on the stage, it's live, it's real, it's happening. I mean, that's the real art of all of it. I mean, to me.
Yeah. That's why they don't record. I think this is true of Broadway. Most shows, they don't record them, you know, to sell later or whatever, because the show that the people paid for to see is the show for them and for the cast and nobody else. Once that's done, it's in memory, you know, it's for nobody else. What happened that day on stage for that audience, you know, I mean, that's what I've heard. I don't know if it's true, but
I don't know if that's true, but I've been on camera a lot, not, you know, as an actress, but I've done some interviews. I was on a morning show for a while, which Sage probably doesn't know about me. It wasn't for a while, actually. It was one morning show that I was on. But It's different. It's different being on camera versus being in front of a live audience. You can judge their whole vibe when you're live, when you're there and they're, you know, a few feet from you versus sitting on the other side of the world watching you on Zoom or whatever. I think, at least for me, I think you kind of feed off of the in-person thing, you know?
The way Rudy and I met, or Sage, the way Sage and
Joaquin,
I met.
Joaquin, you are killing me, man.
Just cut that part out. The way Sage and I met was we did a play together, right? And it was called The Wonderful Ice Cream Soup by Ray Bradbury, and it was an amazing time, very fun. But there was one show, Sage will remember, where, do you remember when Joy pulled out a brassiere? Do
you remember? Yes. That? Yeah. Right? Yeah.
And the weird part is, I think it was our last show. And our director.
Yeah. No. It was the underwear. It was the underwear.
Remember?
Yeah, the funny underwear.
And our director almost had a fit. I mean, I thought he was going to have a heart attack. Remember? He came into the room and he was red and yelling. And we're like, that was the last show. Because he's like, we're never doing this again. And I'm like, well, no, we're not.
But we came back like what 6 months later and we did it again though.
But it happened. It was live. It hadn't happened before. It never happened again. So that audience got that show is theirs. Nobody's ever going to see that show again with that. What happened?
Yeah. So, hey, I want to ask you about that. Do you remember one show someone was taking video?
Yes, Sage. What, Sage? I didn't hear you, Sage.
Do you remember one show that we did? Someone was taking video.
Yes, Sage. Yeah.
And I've never, gosh dang it. And I've never heard any word about it other than seeing the person do it. Now, was that just for Ray's archive? Or, I mean, do you know of any way to get a hold of that? Or?
I don't remember. I remember that, yes. But I remember. Who filmed it? Who? Somebody? Like a professional videographer?
I wish I could remember his name.
I would love to see that show.
Yeah, there was one of the guys who was like not in it, but he was around.
Well, Robert Kerr.
No, it wasn't Robert. Okay. Remember Robert did the opening with us on stage. Hey, look at that guy. Remember that part when he's walking? Yeah. You know, so he did that. And someone else, I don't know, I can't remember, but I know it was someone who was around the theater. It was kind of a younger cat. And I believe I heard someone say, this is for Ray's archive. And we're like, can we get a copy? Can we see it? Can we see it? And, you know, probably. And then I never heard about it again.
I'm sure it's somewhere. If they did it for his archive. I mean, that guy's famous, so.
Either that or they put it in the capsule and sent it to Mars with him.
Or that. This is a funny story. I don't know if Sage has told you this one, but Rebel, we had the cast, right? And him, Sage and his buddies, I always say that to Sage. They thought I was gay, right? Oh, no. And there's nothing wrong with being gay, but they thought I was gay, and I'm not gay. I'm heterosexual, married, all that. But there was this one cat, his name was Daniel, and he kept, we were doing a scene where we're changing his pants, and I could notice that when I try to help him, he would like jump, I mean, on stage. And I'm like, well, I guess he's in character, I don't know. Then Sage tells me after this thing's all over, he was afraid of you because he thought you were gay, and he didn't want you to touch him. Ask him if that's not a true story.
I believe that, judging by Sage's reaction right now, I believe that is 100% true.
I was into a lot of mischief. People are a good time.
People are just saying he's not gay.
Because it was more fun watching you both be very uncomfortable.
So
that's
silly.
Right. The next run, everybody was cool with it.
Oh, okay.
But everybody knew that you're not gay, is what I meant.
Okay, well, I hope. I mean, like I said, there's nothing wrong with it, but I'm not.
Gosh dang it. Hey, you know what, Joaquin? I was purposefully not going to bring any of that up, but I'm glad that you did.
Sorry, man. That was a funny story.
It was. Oh my goodness. So in your class, I'm fascinated about the class thing. And yeah. So the first class was kids at risk. Now, are you still with those kids?
No. That kind of ended. It kind of, Tony kind of stopped being in charge of it and it kind of dissipated. So I don't know what's happening with that. I know it's still going on, but I know Tony's not involved. And when Tony stepped out, I stopped. And I started with Tiffany at Improv It Up.
Okay. So are you with kids again, or is it young adults?
Yeah. Both. Okay. Both. Tiffany, right now we're teaching at Pomona High School. And we're also teaching teachers from the Pomona Unified School District. And then we also teach corporate companies like Niagara. And it's learning to be in touch with your emotions, better public speaker, better interaction with your team through improv. So that's how that works.
Oh yeah, I mean, because
I think that would be useful.
Yeah,
one of the keys of improv is to listen, to be connected, to be present.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So that's, you know, and I'll still be doing that when I do my own thing, but. that's what I'm doing right now and it's Zoom right now because of COVID, but
right.
Normally it's in person, you know.
Soon. Hey, yes. So I not to put you on the spot or anything, no. But I don't suppose you would have like maybe a little game that the three of us could play right now, like a little improv we can maybe do
just for fun. Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Let's do this. All right. So
this is me.
Okay, wait, hold on. Listeners, I need to preface this little game with it's Rebel against two actors.
Oh,
this isn't gonna be a fair game, but I'm gonna do it. Let's do this.
The first thing we'll do, this will be easier for you, Rebel, is Rudy Sage will be a the coordinator at a press conference. I'll be doing the press conference and you'll be the reporter. Okay. And you'll be asking me questions and we're going to pick a subject first. So Rebel, I'll let Rebel do it. Pick us a crazy subject that I'm going to be talking about at a press conference.
Okay.
You pick. Well, just tell me that first and then you'll be the reporter.
Okay. I'm going to ask you how you feel about the term metrosexual.
Oh, all right. So that's the press conference. I'm talking about metrosexual. So Rudy's the coordinator. So I'll be off camera.
Sage is the coordinator.
You're gonna introduce me, and I'm gonna come in and speak about that. Okay. So you introduce. Go ahead.
Ladies and gentlemen, here to speak on the ins and outs of metrosexuality. Joaquin Gergay the Third.
Hello. Thank you for being here at the White House. President Biden has chosen me to speak about this today. I know it's a big issue that we have in the United States. I guess I'll take some questions. You from CNN?
So, Mr. Gergay, how do you feel about the term metrosexual? What does it mean to you? And how deep do you think this goes in America?
No, that's a good question. First of all, let's break down the word metro, meaning metropolis. I live near the metro, okay? Sexual, let's break that down. It's sexual. Hey, I like sex. Sexually, we're talking about being on the metro. So really, if you think about the song from Berlin, that's really what metrosexual really is all about. Next question. You, from OAN.
Yes, Mr. Gray. Do you think metrosexual men dress better than the average guy?
It's a good question. I think right now, a lot of metrosexuals are coming over our border. They're coming through Texas, Arizona, New Mexico, and California. We have people at the border now stopping men who look like they're fashionable. You know, they wear H&M. You can notice they're wearing matching shoes and matching belts. Clean cut, eyebrows are done. We stop them at the border. We check their IDs and maybe put them on a bus. Now, it's not just an ordinary bus. It's a Mercedes bus, so it's a nice bus. And we ship them back to wherever they came from. So, yeah, that's how I feel about that. You, one more question. You there from the Christian news group?
Yes, Mr. Gray. I would like to know if you think that metrosexual men wear better shoes, and do they wear hats or do they not?
Wow. That's a loaded question. Not sure what that has to do with Christianity, but yes, metrosexual men who are on the metro, probably having sex, wear matching shoes. This is something that's not known, but metrosexual men, when they have sex, keep their shoes on. it's part of their whatever thing. So, I would say that the shoes and the belts and the hats have to match. Now, you don't have to keep your hat on during sex, but you can put it back on when you're done. It all depends really on your preference. But here at the White House, we like to say that if you're metrosexual, you can be in the administration. We're open to all of it. Oh, one more question. I think it's from the Cholo Network News there. Sage, is your name?
Now I went to the salon and they wouldn't do my hair in a metro style.
Right.
And then I went down to like the H&M and they followed me around the store, but okay. Wouldn't help me.
Okay.
So how do I metro up and sexier metrosexuality, metrosexuosos? How do I get them on?
Okay, I think the main problem is that you're Mexican. Which has nothing to do with being metrosexual. That means that you are being
sexual. He's a mexisexual.
Thank you, Christian Network News. You're a mexisexual. So really, the question is this. Where are you from? Where did you come from? Why are you here? Are you taking our money and jobs? These are things that we're worried about. And that's why they're following you in H&M. They want to ask you that. They want to say, hey, you... I'm taking my jobs. I want to pick strawberries just like you do, and I want the same opportunity.
Hey, I'm from Whittier.
Exactly. Thank you, everyone, for coming to this news conference. It's all the questions we have for today. Thank you.
Thank you so much. That was Joaquin Gergay on metrosexuality.
Gray.
He's not gay. Gray.
So there you go, a little improv.
Oh my goodness, I think I need a Zoom class on improv.
Did you kill her? Rebel, you killed her.
Yeah, she was good. You were good. I thought you were good. Fun, huh?
Fantastic. Man, I miss that stuff. That's always a good time.
I love it so much because, you know, when I was at the Groundlings, I started at the Groundlings 20 years ago and I went through their whole program. At first, I didn't get it. I would be in class and the teacher would be yelling at us that, you know, who are you? Where are you? What are you doing? Stop! You know, I mean, that was their system. I'm like, what is this? You know, because they wanted you to, you know, let's get this, you know, who are you? What are you doing? Don't ask questions. And I would call my wife crying. I can't do this. I don't even know why I'm paying to do it. I can't. But then one day, something clicked in my head, you know, and it just, it just opens, it's like opening a door, and you're like in the Wizard of Oz, you know, when it's black and white and then it turns to color. That's how I felt, you know. I'm like, oh my gosh, now I get it. And it's just, I fell in love with it, you know, ever since. So continue on.
Well, it's, you know, I every now and again, I will employ certain techniques in my day job.
Oh, for sure.
And it's fun to watch people unwittingly play along. It's fun to watch people not know what the heck is going on, but they're strangely entertained for some reason. Yeah. It's fun to piss people off. I mean, you know, you agitate people and they just walk away because you really didn't do anything wrong, but you didn't do anything right.
Joaquin, Sage still stands by that rule. He still employs that wherever he goes.
I'm sure he does. And, you know, working in a restaurant, every table is a new little stage, a new little theater, a new little audience, you know, so it is fun. In my job, it's just constant, you know, because I like to entertain people when they come to eat in my restaurant, because it is very expensive where I work, so they're paying a lot of money, but I also want it to be an experience, you know. I don't want to be a robot or an order taker. I want to be involved, and when they leave, they have a memory, you know. It's not just the food or what they paid, but the experience. You know, so.
And hey, you know, entertainers entertain. That's what we do.
That's true. It's nonstop. You know what? My dad was the same way. My dad was always making jokes. Every chance he could. And I think it rubbed off on me, of course. And it's now rubbed off on Carmina. And my poor wife, you know, my daughter and I are going back and forth, and she's just like.
let me guess. Her main complaint is, you guys are always on. You're always on.
She's used to it, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been with my wife over 30 years now, so.
Beautiful.
Long time.
She must be just a sainthood. Many times over, yes?
Yeah.
Yeah.
when she passes, I'm going to try to make her a saint. I'm going to go to Italy and talk to the Pope, and we'll see. I'm sure he'll say yes.
Yeah,
I'm sure.
We were expecting you. Why did it take you so long? We could have had this living. It didn't have to be post, you know, posthumous. It didn't have to be
that word.
Yeah.
So.
All right.
Joaquin, thank you so much for joining us today. It has been my pleasure to get to chat with you and interact with you and just get to know you. So if you would please give out any website, social media, whatever you would like, go for it.
I'm terrible at this because I'm, you know, 52, but I guess you can find me on Facebook, Instagram. I don't really have a website right now because we're building the website for the school, and I had a website, but it was never any good. So we just let it go. But just really through these podcasts, Instagram, Facebook, and then hopefully the Working Actors Theater will have its own website very soon. And I'm going to, you know, put content on there too. So it'll be all through there. So
I have one last question, because I didn't rely on just knowing you personally. I did do a little bit of, and I saw something that, and it's just because it's my sense of humor.
Yeah.
Your 2-minute comedy show that you put on YouTube.
Did you like that?
The joke about what jokes can you tell?
Yes.
That's the best mugging I've seen ever.
Oh my God. Well, you know what? It's so funny. Before we go, I have a 16-year-old daughter, so she's of this world. She's of this new age, the new, you know, what's correct, what's right. And she's always correcting me, you know, and it's the truth. And I appreciate it. It's not like I'm putting her down, because I do need change, you know, but it's just constant. You know, when you're a comedian, you know, there's really not that filter, because as comedians, our mission, our responsibility is to put a mirror up to society. And that mirror, if you can look in that mirror, and sometimes it's not going to be pleasant. But I understand, you can't say midget. You can't, you know.
Hey, Just because you're taller than me, you pick that word?
That really doesn't offend me.
Sage is one of the few people. Sage is the rebel. Sage is one of the few people on Earth that I'm taller than.
And me. Oh,
and you. Okay, and you. But you're a woman. This is a man.
Oh, this is insane. Where's Carmina to tell you you're being sexist right now?
Oh, I know, I know. Okay, Rebel, whatever you are. I don't. Okay, wait. You know what's funny is I used to go to, you know what? Sage used to do this too when he was in Hollywood. How many jockey auditions did you go on?
Oh, easy. Right? Hey, you know what? I booked one of the elves for a Disney commercial. I was an elf. Yeah.
Or an elf.
But
I love those because I'm kind of a tall, tall side. So I go to the auditions and all these people, they'd all be like this size. Seriously. Yeah. So I walk in, I'm like,
put your hands aside.
Excuse me. I guess I'm gonna book this one. Yeah. Wish I was big just once.
Right.
But anyways, so that's why I did that. I'm gonna put on a 2-minute stand-up routine where I don't say anything because everything you say, somebody's gonna find fault in it, you know? And I think it's a shame, but I don't want to get into it. You know?
Oh, believe me, in the last 3 years, I've probably almost been fired half a dozen times just because of that. Like you said, we hold up the mirror and we say, take a look. It's funny.
I'm in the, in my, where I work at the hotel, I'm in the HR Hall of Fame.
Nice.
There's like a wall of pictures. Hey.
Yeah, I feel like you two are definitely kindred spirits, like for real. Hashtag for real for the kids.
Right.
For sure.
Hashtag I miss Sage, you know.
We have I miss you too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we're going to let you go on about your fantastic life because I know you're a busy man.
Believe it or not, it's the truth.
Oh, hey, you're going to look up and say, my dad wanted me to be you.
And he's going to go, I don't think so. All right, boss.
All right. Thanks, guys.
And thank you so much.
All right, take care.
Love you.